Welcome to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, the podcast for high achievers who want to stay sharp, focused, and full of energy despite their diagnosis. With your host, National Board Certified Functional Medicine Health Coach, Julie Michelson, where Julie helps you take your power back from autoimmunity. And now here's your host, Julie Michelson.
Welcome back to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast. I'm your host, Julie Michelson. And today we're joined by Divya Gupta, board-certified nutritionist candidate and restorative wellness practitioner specializing in gut health. Through Divya Nutrition and Wellness, she guides ambitious professionals on a personalized journey to reclaim their health and live life on their terms. Divya's expertise reflects a departure from conventional approaches, emphasizing a holistic approach to well-being. In today's episode, we're discussing the connection between liver and gallbladder health and thyroid health. Divya not only explains how these organs work together synergistically, but she gives us tips to support liver, gallbladder, and thyroid health wherever you may be in your health journey. Divya, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Julie.
I am excited for our conversation. I know this is going to just be of so much value to listeners. So I want to know if you would share some of your story, because you actually have a fun, well, probably wasn't fun for you, but a unique story and kind of entry into this autoimmune functional medicine world.
Absolutely. Yes, it wasn't fun, but you know, when we look back, it all happened for a reason.
Yes.
So I'm an Indian immigrant. This year marked my 20 years in this country. And you know, like most Indian immigrants, I came here on a very stereotypical path of finishing my computer science engineering in India, then came here for my master's. I went to an Ivy school doing master's in information and systems and management. And then I started working in corporate America, worked in corporate America for 15 plus years. And never in a million years, I thought I would be doing completely so different. You know, my dad was like, all the thousands of dollars I spent on your education. And now I'm like, not doing that. But, you know, we all come into the space of either, you know, with our own story that we struggle with, or we watch somebody very close to us going through something that really inspires us and we find a purpose. And I had a little bit of both going.
Yes.
So my health challenges started with my own. At the age of 20, while I was still in India, in my final year of engineering, I lost my gallbladder due to painful stones. And it all happened within a matter of a few months where, you know, I woke up one night, you know, around 2, 3 a.m. in pain. And I'm like, you know, maybe I ate something funny that day, or, you know, it could be whatever. I'm just pacing the room because that's the only thing that seemed to like keep the pain at bay, the space. And it got fine. And then you go back to sleep. But then it happened again the next day. I didn't tell my parents because I'm like, why bother them? It's just a tummy ache, right? Because everything in the abdomen is around tummy. It's like a general area. After a few nights, I'm like, okay, you know, I've been not sleeping well and I'm in pain. I finally told my parents. They're like, okay, just wake us up next time. And of course, it happened again. I woke them up and it was so confusing, not sure, you know, trying different medicines, different things. Nothing worked until fast forward. One night I was in excruciating pain and tears. I'm like, okay, let's just go to the emergency room at this point to find out what's going on.
Sure.
And that's when they found out, oh, you have gallstones. So in some regard, it was a relief. At least now I know what it is.
Right.
Though at the age of 20, I was not in biology. I didn't know what the gallbladder is or what it, you know, I know it's an organ in a body, what role does it play? Why is it there? I don't know. Like, okay, fine. You know, we go to the endocrinologist. Oh, we can take it out because, you know, you don't need that organ. You can live without it. I'm like, you know, get me out of this pain. Get me out of this misery, whatever it takes. And I had scheduled it, you know, everything in life, as if you can schedule it. I'm like, I have my exams. I'm going, let's do the surgery after it. But one fine night, you know, life has other plans. Oh my God. You know, there are certain things in life. I don't remember a lot about being 20 and a lot of things that happened, but I remember these episodes and this one night where I woke up in so much pain. I've been through childbirth And I would take childbirth any day than the pain that I was going through. I was throwing up, I was in tears. I know my mom is in tears. Like I had to be rushed to the ER, and the surgery had to be done that night. Otherwise the gallbladder would have burst with stones. Okay, so, you know, the gallbladder is out, you know, life is back, I'm not in pain, move on. You know, I came to the US, but my health challenges still continued. You know, you're so focused on your academics and what you need to do, and you're young and in 20s too, you just keep pushing through. But by the time I turned 24, 25, I was still dealing with digestive issues, and, you know, I would still get those PTSD, like sort of pain at times and not sure why. And I get diagnosed with Hashimoto's. Knowing what I know now, and, you know, like, you know, these are gallbladder and the thyroid is connected. But at that point, now I have an autoimmune condition and nobody really dug in. Maybe when I was 20, if somebody had asked another question or dug in, or why as a 20-year-old, healthy, have a gallbladder issue, maybe my thyroid condition could have been salvaged or managed or, you know, reversed. But sure. At 25, I had my Hashimoto's. And even then, you know, the Synthroid, the pill that was given, and you move on with your life. And for me, what really lit the fire and how I got into the space is my mom was also going through the exact same journey as I was. So she had a gallbladder removed a couple of years before mine, but she didn't have any pain. So we really didn't make the connection when I had pain. She had a Hashimoto's diagnosis. And around the time I had my Hashi's diagnosis, she got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which, Julie, I know that you've been through it personally. So, and I'm like, okay, you know, I don't know what, but something in my brain lit up. I'm like, I'm watching a movie, a preview of a movie. And if I don't make any changes, I'm following the exact same path, I probably will get there sooner. And that's when I'm like, okay, I got into it. What can I do? What can I change? And this is 16 years ago, 15 years ago. I didn't know, like, I had to look for gut health or what are you, you know, I just got into the literature. Let me change my diet. I picked up a few health books, and it made such a huge difference. And that's where my love affair with health and wellness started. I'm like, I need to know more. What can I do? I'm feeling better. Like, you know, my digestion is better. My mood's better. My energy is better. And why aren't people talking about it? And that really started my quest to learn more, going back to school and getting my nutrition certificate. And now I've quit my Silicon Valley job to my parents' dismay. And now, but you know what? They're like happy. Like, you know, I'm helping people get their life back.
Amazing. And you're healthy and happy, which is, you know, is what the number one. So let's talk about this. How is gallbladder connected to, you know, thyroid, Hashimoto's? You know, how are you connecting those dots?
One would think, okay, you know, each of these, the thyroid, the gallbladder, liver, they all sit in different parts on our system. How are they connected? But, you know, nothing in our body works in isolation. It's all interconnected. And every part of a body or organ performs multiple functions as well. They never just do one thing. So let me back up a little. You know, for your thyroid to work effectively, you know, it needs five different organs to work synergistically together. You know, your brain, of course, the thyroid, because your brain first sends a signal to the thyroid to produce the hormone, thyroid hormones. Then you need your liver and your gallbladder. We'll get into that. And also your adrenals. Now, when it comes to, let's talk about the liver for a second. Now, when your liver is your master detox organ, like, does so much for us. It filters our blood. It synthesizes our vitamin D. It produces cholesterol. It produces bile. It, you know, stores our excess glucose. And I'm sure I'm missing a ton different. It does a ton, right? So it is important. And actually, I'm forgetting an important function that I should mention. It's also the place where the inactive thyroid hormone gets converted to the active form. And that's important. The T4 to T3 conversion, a lot of it happens in the liver as well. And we talked about it produces bile. And a gallbladder, which sits right underneath the liver, it's like a little pear-shaped organ on your right side. So once the liver produces the bile, it stores it in the gallbladder to be used when we eat a fatty meal. And, you know, our bile, again, is produced by the produced in the liver. It uses a lot of raw materials, your cholesterol, your bile salts, your bile acids, and water and, you know, a few more of the raw materials that go into it to produce the bile. And when it goes into the gallbladder, it gets stored, it can get concentrated, and it gets more concentrated. So when we do eat a fatty meal, A, it is present, and two, it is in the right concentration so that, you know, the appropriate amount can be squeezed out into a small intestine. It can digest a fatty meal as well. So, and, you know, your question, you know, we're asking about how is now, Viviana, how is this connected to our thyroid health? So we talked about how our liver converts our T4 to T3. Now, mm-hmm. if our thyroid is, we're talking about hypo, like, you know, it's not functioning as well, it's underactive, or even it could be subclinical, right? You don't have to be outside of the ranges for it to not perform well. You could be on the upper end or higher end of optimal ranges. A whole other conversation about our standard and optimal ranges out there. Now, that will impact your amount of hormone that is produced, and then it will also impact on the cholesterol production. Our thyroid has a direct impact on our cholesterol production. And cholesterol is also, as I said, a raw material into bile. Now, just think of it, you know, you're making a stew, you need all these raw materials and everything is off. So now your consistency of your bile, now your bile is not of the right, you know, doesn't have everything that it needs in the right amount. And so that could be one way how your thyroid could impact. The second is, okay, now say even if that's being produced fine, it's stored in the gallbladder, the bile, your thyroid plays a huge role in every function in your body, from your mood to your energy to how you digest your food to your fertility to your heat intolerance or cold intolerance, you name it, your thyroid has a role to play in it. And as I said, you know, one of the important points is, you know, the energy, you know, it provides, our thyroid helps, gives ourselves the energy. So now, even if you have the bile in your gallbladder, it needs to be squeezed. It needs to be contracted and squeezed out. And now each of our cells in our body, we have what, trillions of cells, have these receptors for the thyroid hormone. Now, if your thyroid is not functioning well, it's low, your gallbladder cell does not have the right amount of thyroid hormone in it to contract and squeeze out the appropriate amount of bile. Now, what happens? So it's not functioning, it's tired. And the bile is going to back up into still in the gallbladder. Your liver is still producing and throwing it into the gallbladder. Now it's not squeezing it out. Now it gets backs up. It can get sludgy, and that could now form gallstones. And 90% of gallstones are cholesterol based, right? So now you can see how your thyroid, malfunction or not appropriate impacts your cholesterol production, which can impact your bile production. Then how it's stored in your, and how the bile is stored in the gallbladder, and how it can eventually lead to gallstones.
So wait a minute. Are you saying, first of all, that when somebody has gallstones, we don't need to immediately remove gallbladder? And also, if you're diagnosed with gallstones, should we be immediately, if we haven't already, like looking at thyroid? And that connection is a potential reason why the gallstones are forming to begin with?
Oh, absolutely. You bring up a great point. Again, there is a synergistic relationship between a thyroid and the liver and gallbladder. It could be a thyroid not, you know, subclinical or underfunctioning can cause liver and gallbladder, or it could be the other way around, right? You know, liver and gallbladder could impact your thyroid as well. So it's a chicken or the egg. It's so hard to know. But yes, you're absolutely right. If you already have a thyroid condition, you know, take care of your liver and gallbladder health. Or if you have been diagnosed with some gallbladder issues, or you have, you know, your liver function not functioning, get your thyroid checked, get a full panel. Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. You know, that was my, please go get your thyroid checked if you're having gallstones or if you have gallbladder. Because I was looking at some stats, Julie, and there are in the US, I think it's 20 in the last year, 600,000 gallbladder removal surgeries are performed.
Oh yeah. It's almost treated like an appendix at this point, where if somebody has pain, it's like first line of treatment is remove, you know, if they see gallstones. And I know people are told that, you know, well, if you have them, then you're going to keep getting them. And people are convinced that they don't need them. And I work with so many people that have had their gallbladder removed, you know, before I've even met them. And you were particularly young, which is really fascinating. Really makes me, like back to that chicken or egg. It's like, was your thyroid maybe subclinical at that point?
I don't have any blood work or lab results. I'm 41. I don't know at this point, but yeah, you're right. Chicken, the egg, and it could, you know, we all have our genes, but you know, epigenetics plays a role. It's, you know, what our environment and the toxin that pulls the trigger. So yes, you know, every woman in our family, and it's very common in Southeast Asian women, and it could be more research of why, yes, we have the genes. But then the food, the toxins, the environmental,
Right. And that becomes that chicken or egg. You know, we talk about toxins all the time. And like you said, it's like, okay, is it toxins affecting liver, then affecting thyroid? You know, it is. And also, we don't need to know, you know, once we have an awareness that something is going on, we can investigate and make sure that we're protecting all of these organs. I'm curious. So your story, you know, you obviously had like severe pain and were at that point where the gallstones were causing a real problem. But what are some indications for people that maybe their gallbladder is not so happy?
Yeah. Great question. You know, because mine was just when was yelling at me.
Right. Well, as most of us, you know, the body whispers and we don't pay attention because we're busy.
We're not paying attention to the little nudges that our body is giving. So, you know, so these are some symptoms that you could be feeling if before the gallbladder gets to like the yelling stage. Number one is, you know, you're getting bloated after eating a fatty meal. And, you know, we could all experience bloating at some different times. And there could be so many different reasons for bloating. You know, you could have SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, or other reasons, your gut dysbiosis. But especially after eating a fattier meal, you're feeling bloated. That's one little nudge.
And if you have SIBO, you're probably bloated every time you eat, not just with a fatty meal. So that's a great tip. Yeah.
That's, you know, like fatty, your fat content is more number one. Number two, you know, you have the stomach distension and you're burping a lot. It's you know, nobody wants to be burping after a meal. That could be a little, okay, why am I burping so much and my stomach is distended? And then number three is you could have clay colored stool because bile plays a role in the color of your stool. So if your stool is getting clay colored lighter, that could be one sign of, you know, your bile metabolism could be off. Number four is you are low in your fat soluble vitamins because our bile helps us digest the fatty meal, right? The fat in our meal, which, and our fat soluble vitamins are A, D, E, and K. How many of us are low in vitamin D, and how many of people do you see are low in those? And that could be a sign, you know, and you can keep taking supplements, you know, a supplement for vitamin D and a supplement. And if you still don't see or your levels getting to normal ranges, that could be a sign that, okay, that you're, you know, if you don't have the bile to absorb, even if you take the supplement, that could be a sign. And number of us, like, you know, just chalk it up to aging. I'm getting older, so I'm, you know, my eyes are getting weaker, that, you know, because you need your vitamin A for your eye health. Your, you know, your vitamin E is such a great antioxidant as well that we need. Your K is for blood clotting. So, you know, that could be one indicator. And obviously your gallbladder, by then, you know, you would feel it. Trust me, you'll feel it at attack. But if you, on the right side, if you feel a little inflamed or if it hurts a little, maybe those are some signs that people can start paying attention to.
Such good advice. So you just mentioned, you know, this absorption of the fat soluble vitamins and nutrients. How else does you know, what this connection between these organs and our nutrient, you know, what else are we looking for? Because hopefully everybody listening at this point knows, you know, at least what their vitamin D is and, you know, how hard, I mean, it took me years and years and years to get my vitamin D up to, you know, what I would consider an optimal level. That's, I don't have an issue with that anymore, but you know, some people haven't supplemented, they're low, especially in the autoimmune community. You know, usually they're low if they're not supplementing, again, chicken or egg, but some people supplement and, you know, fairly quickly their levels normalize. And some people it really takes a long time. Are there other nutrients that can be an indicator, you know, or that these organs are important for assimilating?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, just, you know, that just reminded me after like years, this year, like last year, my vitamin D was finally above 50.
Isn't that exciting?
Yeah. And it took, and it, as you said, it took years.
It took me too.
And I was supplementing and, you know, of course I don't have a gallbladder, you know, I have an autoimmune condition. So, you know, you have to work on my gut. So for everyone listening, you know, both Julie and I, it takes years and it takes, you have to be patient and keep working at it. Yeah. So I was so happy to finally get that vitamin D 56 or around 60. And we want it to be between 50 and 80 to be optimal levels.
And around, I say 70 and 100. So I aim even higher.
higher, you know, so at least above 50, I was happy, or, you know, everyone has their ranges.
Well, and but a big difference between in the 50s and in the 20s too. So, yeah. So,
I know this was not part, but everyone, you know, standard ranges of vitamin D is 30. You know, if between 30 and 50, they say you're normal. And 30 itself, it's okay, but it's not optimal. So.
Well, I think one of the blessings to come out of the period we're maybe coming out of now, you know, during COVID and post COVID, people were learning finally about vitamin D and they're a little less scared of it. And I qualifier here, it is a fat soluble vitamin, so you need to be testing. If you're supplementing, especially, you need to be testing and make sure we don't want to go. You're not going to excrete this in your urine. So, but now I've seen, I wrote an article about this, even like LabCorp, their ranges over the past 2 or 3 years have shifted from that lower end of the scale, because you have to remember when you're looking at normal on a lab panel, you're looking at the average, right? So now that more people are supplementing, all of a sudden, those ranges are going higher, which is good because the doctors that aren't so educated about vitamin D now aren't panicking because a good level's not getting flagged on a regular lab panel. But it is important to watch for sure.
Absolutely. We took a little digression, but I think it was important to talk about the vitamin D level. I'm so glad. You know, silver lining for COVID, it was a hard time for everyone, but people are finally taking into the immunity, their vitamin, their gut health. So which is okay, I'll take that. You know, people take advantage of that. So, you know, let's talk, get back to the question on, you know, let's talk about bile. You know, as I said, and I think in the beginning, nothing in our body just does one function, does one role. So our bile also just doesn't help us, you know, digest and break down our fatty meal. That is number one. But it is also helps us to get rid of excess hormones, excess estrogen that our body doesn't need. It binds to it and gets it out through a fecal matter. And what are hormones made of? Guess what? Fat.
Yep.
So now if you're low in you can see the domino effect here. Now if you're low in your fat soluble vitamins, and now it can play a role in your hormone imbalances. And a number of people are working on have hormones imbalance, working on their hormones, but you need to go upstream to see, okay, are you absorbing your fats? Do you have the right nutrients and the fat-soluble vitamins to make the hormones? So that's another role bile plays in plays as well. The other role it plays is also in, it's like a great antimicrobial, it gets, you know, as it goes into our gut, into digestion, it gets rid of pathogens, any bacteria that we get exposed to. You know, the stomach also does a great job of that, but bile also helps support that. so we don't have an overgrowth of the bad bacteria. So it plays a role in that. And there is also a role, it also signals the HCl production in that direction, for a stomach to produce the hydrochloric acid that is so important for protein digestion and
sure.
And, to get our food in the right acidity level so it can go to step two. And the number of people who have issues with acidity, GERD, GERD. So that's what I listed four or five different ways how bile can help. And the way our bile is metabolized in our body, the way it helps with nutrient absorption, our hormones, and also getting rid of things that we don't need.
So I want to go in two directions with this. First, what are some ways those of us that still have our gallbladder, what are some things we can be doing to take care of liver and gallbladder?
Yeah, no, great question. And this is the part that I love. Yes. I love to break it down into nutrition, supplements, and also lifestyle, because there's never one thing. I wish there was a magic pill and right. We could all take it and be rich, live, get, you can get, you and I can get an island and yes. live there, but no, there isn't. So I'll walk through what you can do in these three buckets. And, when you have a gallbladder, and also if you don't have a gallbladder, what do you need to do? I don't have a gallbladder.
You're going to handle both. That was going to be my next question, because we're not saying just throw in the towel if you don't have a gallbladder. Mm-hmm. There are steps you can take if you don't have a gallbladder to support all of these processes that are going along.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have a gallbladder and, supporting your liver and gallbladder should be like an everyday, it's not just one-time thing, right? So number one, when it comes to nutrition, your liver loves bitter foods. So your bitter foods are your arugula, your endives, your artichokes, your dandelion root, your milk thistle tea. Those herb, the turmeric. Oh my God, turmeric is so great for your liver. And there is a Indian vegetable called bitter gourd. It's in English, you can get it in Indian market. It's really bitter. I love it. So really incorporating these liver loving foods. Some other foods which are not bitter, like beetroot. Your liver, it's great. It helps your liver, support your liver. And I'm blanking on it, but there are more foods. So, your cruciferous vegetables, that's what, your cauliflower, your broccoli.
Sure, those are just detox supporters. Yeah.
Detox of your allium family, which is your garlic and your onion. So just incorporating these foods into your meals is number one way to support your liver and your gallbladder. Number two is also from, taking out those excess sugars and processed food out of your diet, the sad American diet, taking those out, because, your liver does so much. It is, detoxing, it's producing these hormones, it's producing bile. Let's not overburden it. Let's reduce the burden for, while as we can, so it can readjust. So taking those foods out is important. And number three is, really focusing on, a whole foods-based diet. With the right amount of plant and animal-based protein also plays a role. Making sure you're having whole foods, eat something that grows on a plant, not made in a plant. I heard it somewhere and I'm like, I love that, focusing on a whole foods diet. And, number one practice that has been a game changer in my health is starting your day with hot water and lemon. Lemon is so great as a detoxifying agent. It supports your liver health. I sometimes add a pinch of turmeric to it as well.
Of course you do.
And if I'm feeling a little sick under the weather, I'll add some ginger in it too. And especially on cooler months. So these ginger spices are so supportive and so easy to do to start making into your habit. So those are from the nutrients aspect. And if you have a gallbladder, you have your liver, and you identify yourself with some of the symptoms I talked about, maybe giving fatty foods a break for a little bit would be helpful. Like, we're not saying take it out because we need healthy fats. But at this point, maybe your body is not able to process them. We just take your foot out of that pedal and so that your liver can readjust, because our liver cells rejuvenate every 6 weeks. So, we give it a chance to get back, rejuvenate. So those are some on the nutrient side you can help. Also, alcohol, you know, limit alcohol consumption or reduce it for some time during this period where you're supporting your liver and gallbladder.
Sure.
When it comes to lifestyle, exercising, you know, we all know that it has numerous benefits, but it's more about the sweating because skin is another one of our detoxifying organs, right? So when we sweat, we detox as well. So it's important to, you know, get your sweat on. And it doesn't have to be an hour in the gym or, you know, HIIT workouts. It could be 15, 20 minutes of high intensity. And for whatever reason, you know, you have an injury or, you know, you are in a certain stage in your pregnancy, or could be that you cannot really go to the gym. Maybe infrared saunas. So saunas could be very supportive of detoxifying as well from a lifestyle aspect. And when it comes to supplements and herbs, you know, if you need digestion support, right, your digestive enzymes or hydrochloric acid could be great supportive help because your liver and your gallbladder need support to help digest those fats. And the other is ox bile or bile salts could also be helpful, you know, to provide that bile to break down your food so you can absorb those nutrients. So, yeah, there's
especially if you don't, if you know you got your gallbladder out, then really look to be supplementing with something like the ox bile because, you know, you need it. You don't have it at the ready to help digest.
See, like I don't have a gallbladder. Yes, my liver is producing bile, but it's just slowly just trickling into the, into your duodenum, right? Into your small intestine. So yes, I do need to have ox bile and bile, bile acids that I take regularly, especially with my fatty meals. I make sure I have it. And a body, you know, it's beautiful. It adjusts as well. It's been, 21 years. So yes, absolutely. And, you know, some of the teas, herbal tea, the milk thistle tea, dandelion teas could also be very supportive for your liver health as well. So if you don't have a gallbladder, you definitely need to get on digestive support, your ox bile, you know, a digestive enzyme or hydrochloric acid as well, a combination, simple apple cider vinegar. Now, having apple cider vinegar before a meal could also stimulate hydrochloric acid production and could be great for your blood sugar as well. So those are some simple tips that people can take if you still have all your organs, those organs, or if you don't have, right. And again, it's totally okay. We're just having fun here. I don't have it and it's fine. Yes, you can live and you can be healthy, but you just need the right support.
Sure.
You just have to support for it.
Yeah, which I love. And that's where it's so frustrating for me when people come in and they've had their gallbladder removed and they're told by the surgeon, you don't need to do anything. Just go back to how you were living before, which is never the answer when we've had an issue with an organ and then lost the organ. So amazing.
Yeah, I was never told, right? Yeah, trained in India, nobody informed me about that you need support. Even for a year, it was not until I got started learning about it myself.
Right.
And even then, working on your gut is also important. Your gut health also is important. You know, cleaning up your diet, it all is supportive to your bile. And, you know, I didn't touch upon that. Even toxins, that we are surrounded by toxins.
Sure.
You know, it's impossible to live in an environment where we are toxin-free. Even if I go to a jungle, I'm sure our soil is so sprayed and the water is depleted. So because our liver also has to, you know, detoxify, take care of all the environmental toxins that we breathe in, that we touch. So cleaning up your, you know, personal care products, you know, your cleaning products in your house, just taking, you know, your cooking utensils that we get exposed to, reducing your toxic burden so your liver can do what it needs to do without just constantly, I need to get rid of these toxins and then,
Overworking that liver, which is exactly back to what you said about the processed foods, right? If you're throwing a bunch of processed foods into your body, your liver's working on that. It's not going to be able to handle the toxic burden of just living on this planet in present time. So amazing. You have covered so much for us already. Mm-hmm. I always ask for one step that listeners can take starting today to improve their health.
You know, my advice, even to all my clients and, you know, anyone, you know, when I ask this question gets asked, it's like, you know, it can sound so overwhelming and you're listening to this podcast and everyone comes up with their nuggets and tips and it can be like, oh my God, I can't do anything. And you throw in the towel. It just seems so hard. I would say just start small. Maybe start at one thing, adopt one thing. Okay, maybe I'm going to start my day with hot water and lemon. That's it. And you make it a habit and you stack on another one at a later time. So, you know, start at one place. Maybe it's cleaning up your personal care products is where you're starting, and that will benefit your overall health. It'll be so supportive. So start small, take one step at a time until it becomes a habit is what my advice to be is. You know, I know it's overwhelming, it's hard, but you can do it.
Just pick that one thing you know you can do and then build on that. That's brilliant, brilliant advice. So you have an exciting project coming up, which is how we met to begin with. Can you share with listeners about your upcoming summit?
Yes, I have a summit on Reset Your Thyroid and Reverse Hashimoto's going live April 1st. And as you know, I'm so, you know, thyroid and Hashimoto, that's how my journey into this space started. And I really want to share the message across like the audience that there is a lot you can do. There are simple strategies that you can adopt to be an empowered consumer of your own health. So you can be better advocates when you go talk to your doctor or the medical profession you're working with. And you have to look at it holistically from your lifestyle to your thyroid health. If you are on medication, how can you navigate that? What are your labs? What are some lifestyle practices? What are some hormones? How does stress play a role? And have amazing experts, including Julie, you're part of the summit. As you know, I have more than 25 experts coming in, speaking on different topics. And I'm so excited for our conversation on preventing the autoimmune domino effect. You know, as I said initially, in my bio, when my mom went from Hashimoto's to rheumatoid, and that's how your journey into the space started. Because, you know, once you get an autoimmune condition, you're three times likely to get another one. So really, you know, I can't wait to get
into
that.
And we don't have to. That's the, yes. You know, sign up for the summit and get find out how to avoid that domino effect. But also, I know I'm familiar with a lot of the other experts. I know the interviews are going to be amazing. I can't wait for the summit to get out. And we will have links in the show notes for you so that you can easily sign up for the summit.
Yes, thank you. So looking forward to seeing you there, and everyone join us at the summit too.
As am I. And tell us, for people that are listening on the go and not looking at the show notes right now, where's the best place? They're like, oh my gosh, Divya has so much information. I want to find out more about her. Where's the best place to find you?
Yes, they can find me on my website, divyagupta.net. And I'm quite active on Instagram as well. So it's @_divgupta. I know those links will be in the show notes. So those are the two places you can find me.
Wonderful. Divya, thank you so much. You have given us amazing gold today.
Thank you so much, Julie, for having me and for doing what you do and sharing the message. You know, the world needs you.
Well, thank you. We need these conversations to continue. So thank you, everybody. Check out Divya's upcoming summit. You can get all of the links in the show notes by visiting inspiredliving.show. I hope you had a great time and enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity. Did you enjoy this episode? Please like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to get a transcript of this and every other episode, just head on over to inspiredliving.show or click on the link in this episode's description. There, you can also find everything we discussed in this episode, including links and information about our guests. You can even send in your questions to be answered by Julie in a future episode. That's inspiredliving.show. Until next time, this is Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, helping you take your power back.